So, have you ever been in a foreign country, Paul, and you went to the movie theater and there was like an English-speaking movie, and have you ever had that experience?
I've been to Canada.
That doesn't count.
One time I went to Tijuana, but I got lost
and you didn't
I
go
felt
to
like
movies.
A giant, and I didn't go to the movies. My primary mission was to leave.
Okay.
So I never saw them. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, okay, so the experience is you go in, and if it's an English-speaking movie, then you're going to get all the jokes way before anybody else in the theater. So you end up being the first person laughing, the only person laughing at some jokes. And because of your podcast, I hadn't listened to the podcast, but I heard about this movie, Wanderlust. And so a friend and I went yesterday, and because we're out in an urban sprawl zone and we're like the two hippies, it was like the same experience where we were laughing at all these jokes or laughing before everybody else got it. And it was just it made the experience even funnier. Like when, like Jennifer.
So what did you think of Wanderlust?
Oh, I thought it was cute. I mean, I didn't have any like big expectations of Hollywood, but like there's a scene where Jennifer Aniston talks about like, why is the grass crying? And like me and Amy just start laughing and everybody else is like, what? And she's just drinking the Kool-Aid, so to speak. So, it's like,
right.
You know, we're out in like, right. You know, soccer momville. So,
I do kind of think that a lot of that movie is going to be stuff that's like, I mean, funny for us in a whole different way because we know about all this stuff.
Like
and,
the truth
and
circle.
And most people watch the movie, you're going to be like, I hadn't thought of that way because a lot of stuff they're just not going to get.
Right.
But for us, I mean, I think it's kind of like an educational movie for people that are into intentional community. Like, here's all the stuff to not do.
Right.
But it's like, you're going to try to not do it. But no, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to be there.
Yeah. So I thought it was harmless. I haven't listened to your podcast, but yeah, I never hardly go to movies. It's been a few years. I guess in like an American real theater. So anyway,
right.
I did it.
So and for me, it had been like almost a year since I'd been in the theaters. And I think Jocelyn and I took her son, Forrest, you know, who was in the Mullen video.
Yeah, I saw Forrest.
To see the Harry Potter show. And, and then, of course,
I thought you
asked Forrest afterwards, hey, did you like that? And he just shakes his head.
Mm-hmm.
So, because you know Forrest, he's like real chatty.
Well, if you took him to Wanderlust, he would probably be way embarrassed at some of the sexual innuendos, I think.
He'd probably roll his eyes or something. Because that boy communicates without vocal cords. But, he's got like a thing for Volkswagen vans. He's like, so I don't know. And on top of that, I got an email.
He might be a hippie if he has a thing for Volkswagen vans.
He might be. He might be like a. And so apparently, I got an email today from Jocelyn. Apparently, he's been doing some volunteer stuff at some local organic farms.
Yep. Yeah.
Been showing up as like labor, and so apparently he's going to be doing that today. He's going to be doing some labor somewhere. So, like working all day at a farm in the Puget Sound area.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if you take him to Wanderlust, what would he think? I don't know. That's a good question. But it's not like a really great movie. It's not like wow, that was going to win all kinds of awards. No, it's just a simple little comedy. But yeah, there's I mean, I thought the stuff that was funny was like that. It's like this this list of stuff that I do not want in my community. Although, at the same time, I kind of think about like if nothing else, you do kind of. I mean, it's they were drawn to it for all the upsides, and any kind of community there is a huge list of awesome upsides, and it's just that it also comes with the downsides. So it would be great to get the upsides without the downsides. All right. Sorry, I kind of went off on a tangent there.
Well, I started off. So anyway, go ahead.
So I understand what you go to Soccer Momville, and then yeah, you're the only person laughing at the jokes. The rest of them are like, what? I could see that with that movie. I hadn't thought of that. When Joss and I went to see it, I think there were only like four other people in the theater.
Right. There wasn't a lot of other people. That's true.
Yeah. You know, so, but I think we went and saw it like on a Tuesday or something like that. So, which, I don't know. That was the whole, because we were showing up on a Tuesday, and then it's like, at the moment that we bought the tickets, we're the only people that are in the foyer, and then they got three people working the snack counter, and so I decided to buy popcorn.
Yeah, and, well, probably vegan. I mean, I've worked in movie theaters when I was in high school, so there. It's probably vegan, because they're not going to actually spend money on animal products.
Yeah, I don't know. But this particular theater in Missoula, I think this might be its last year. It's like a little worn out. And but anyway, they made a big deal about how it was Tuesday. Because since it's Tuesday, there's like 50 cents off the popcorn. So instead of it being $87, it's $86.50 or something. For a bag of popcorn. I don't remember the exact price. I just remember thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
<That's really expensive.
laughs> You're going to really charge that much money for popcorn, really? And so I bought the popcorn thinking, I have just been fleeced.
You're doing your part to open the local theater in Missoula. Yeah.
There you go. There you go. That's what I was doing. All right. Today we're going to talk about Sepulcher's Earth Cellars and Open Shelters.
Yes.
Which, of course, you can't talk about without first starting off talking about the movie experience. All right. And then, you know, we read this yesterday, but did you mark up any parts of this one?
Well, maybe the thing is I don't mark up, like, I'm going to read the section. Like, I'll underline different things where I'm like, oh, that gives me a thought, but that's
what I'm trying to do too.
Okay. Just so we don't read too much, but we do have to give an overview before we give a thought, I guess. So,
well I don't know. I mean, okay. So one big thing is that, these are different. The stuff that's in this book on these shelters, I haven't seen in any other book. The closest thing I've ever seen for this kind of thing is Mike Ehlers' book, the $50 and Up Underground House book.
Yeah, but he does a different relationship with the hillside Ehler does, because he's got the water runoff happening on the backside. So that's a big difference. But I see what you're saying, because it's mostly underground. And
well,
then, yeah.
Look at Holzer's stuff very carefully, especially all the pictures. Do you see any of those where behind the shelter is the hillside?
Well, I see what you're saying. The first one is a ditch, so that would be a difference.
Well, yeah,
but
that one's a little different.
You're right. There isn't there.
Before I forget, I think one thing to point out is that you put on that one event that was a 2-day event there at the foot of Mount Rainier. And it was a Sepulcher event, and Mike Ehler came to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we had these two greats kind of together. We got a picture up on Permies with these two guys together,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really cool. But basically, the thing, you know, the amazing thing is that they didn't know about each other until just before your event. So Mike Ehler learned about Sepulcher. He was really showing up there because he wanted to learn more about ponds and stuff.
Right.
But the great thing is, so he'd never heard of Sepulcher before that. And then Sepulcher had not heard about Mike Ehler until Mike Ehler showed up and started saying, because then at one point in time, Sep starts talking about these shelters. Mm-hmm. And then the two of them started swapping notes on this topic. But basically, completely independent of each other, they both pretty much came to the same conclusion with just slight variations on the same way to construct stuff. And so I, you know, in a way, this little section of chapter 2 is like, enormous. It's huge. This is, I mean, this is something that it could be whipped up into an entire book of its own. Just the, you know, going into a lot more detail about the how to and why and variations and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And I guess for listeners who don't know Mike Ehler's work especially well, it's like, think of yourself building into a hillside. He says the first thought house is basically when you just burrow into the hillside, but then you have all of these water light problems. And so how he actually does them is that he'll build a gap behind the hillside before the house for water to run down and for it to be kind of like this back porch area.
He calls it the uphill patio.
Uphill patio. And yeah, then he's got names for all of these different foyers and entrances and windows and things that he's kind of worked out so that you're underground, but you're essentially like lighted from all of these different areas and even able to walk out at different levels, even though you're still capped by this enormous earthen, you know, undergroundness.
Well, so I think in both cases, so the similarities between Mike Ehler's work and Sepp Holzer's structures of this type, the similarities between the two are is that they have a very thick earthen roof.
Yes.
And while Sepp refers to them as underground, they are all both. I mean, Ehler will make some that are more embedded in the ground, but all of Sepp's stuff that I've seen is level with the ground,
right.
And so it just has a thick earthen roof.
Right, and then the sides too, because he has these big timbers, and then man, you could pack up earth along the sides as well. Try to see if he's got a picture of that.
Totally. But they're not underground. They're not like below ground level. They're not even, it's like when you walk in, you are at ground level still. It's not like you step down into it. So Mike's stuff will sometimes be a little bit more underground, but Sepp's stuff is definitely ground level, always ground level.
Well, except for this, the first one. The pig ditch kind of one.
The pig thing, but it's not really a structure.
It's more of a variation of a theme to get them some quick shelter easily. And I didn't know that he did this. I thought he built the full things for the pigs everywhere. So when I saw that, I was like, oh, cool. Like there's just like a kind of in-between where the pigs are more sheltered, but you know, you don't have to, you know, spend a few days baking a bigger thing, even though it looks like it doesn't take him too long to pop one of these up. It definitely involves machinery.
For the full proper, but the thing for the pigs, I mean, that's basically just you're scratching out a ditch-ish like thing and then throwing some logs and twigs on top of it and then you're mm-hmm. done.
Yeah.
So it's like total construction time under an hour, probably will last a year. You could rebuild it every year in like 10 minutes. You know, that's why I was looking at that and I was kind of thinking, well, you know, the pigs could go and jostle stuff around or whatever. And you might find yourself every year going and rebuilding it by just moving the logs back up or something. Like they can knock things down. But that's more of a temporary kind of quickie pig shelter thing. Whereas the root cellars and whatnot, the shelters, those are something that takes some actual construction work. Those take some time. I mean, like, you know, they're either the log-based ones where there's like a whole bunch of vertical logs, or else they're the stone-based ones, which have a lot of huge rocks to, you know, that are stacked up to kind of create a root cellar-like thing. And they can be used for root cellars or for animal shelters. Or he also mentions the idea of it just being for storage.
So did he build one of these over at Matilda's? Like, I think there's a picture of you guys.
Oh, don't say that name. I'm just so angry with her still.
Okay.
I just don't
remember. Okay. Did he build one of them while you were around?
Yes, yes he did. I took pictures. It's up. But it
well,
was
how
a, it was
it
definitely
t- Oh, sorry. How
he,
long did
The one that he did it was stones for the walls. and the sides. You know how there's the outside sides, mm-hmm. And then logs for the roof. And so I've got pictures of it, but they had a bunch of big equipment and they spent days making that. But a lot of it was like, they're making it look real fancy and I think he even
talked about how he takes longer with the stone structures than the wood ones, because the stone should be built to last and the wood's going to rot out every few years anyway. And one, I don't know, a few, but I don't know. What would you say, like 10 years or?
So it depends on what wood you use.
Mm-hmm.
But he was saying that if you use larch, 30 years. If you use black locust, which he refers to as Robina.
Oh, right. Okay, great.
Then it's like longer than us. So it's hard to, I mean, it will eventually decay, but black locust, I mean, it could go 100 years. I mean, it depends, right? But he says if you build it with like pine or spruce or, you know, some of the woods that don't last quite as long, then you could expect 10 years.
Right. And then, of course, over here, you build it and it's moist. So, I mean, the black locust will still last a really long time, but I think he might have a drier.
Yeah, I kind of wonder if there might be ways to mitigate the rot even with natural stuff, but I'm not sure. I kind of was thinking like along the, well, and, but part of it is that it's like if you use it as a root cellar, you're trying to keep the moisture inside kind of high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's part of the mission. So, in which case, if the moisture inside, the humidity is high inside, then your apples will keep a long time, but your wood won't keep as long. But the other thing, you know, he's got a picture in here of one he's done out of stone, and even the ceiling is stone, which I think, wow, that's a tough one. That's a tough one to do. I mean, to be able to do your stonework in such a way on the roof that it holds. So that's some master stuff there.
That's some nice big stone too. Yeah.
So, all right, back to the comparison with Ehler and Holzer. I believe both of these guys, and Holzer doesn't emphasize it, but Ehler does. And the idea is that you got to make sure that the water runs away from the opening,
mm-hmm.
and you do not want. Because you're right, because Ehler calls it his first thought house, and when I write about it in my Wafati article, I call it the don't do this house. So then the idea is that with that design, water pools up behind the house. Water flows back from the opening to mm-hmm. the back of the house, and then the stuff coming down the hillside is also pooling up behind the house. And then Ehler's stuff and Holzer's stuff is designed to say, no, you got to set the opening up in such a way that the water coming down the hillside does not pool up behind the house. And then the water that lands near the front of the opening goes back away from the opening. So in all of Ehler's designs, Ehler basically makes the opening face uphill. That's the primary angle.
And you would hear that and think, well, if it's uphill, doesn't the water go in? But it's like you just have to see a picture from his book to understand because it's hard to understand in words, I think.
And then Holzer tends to have the opening facing downhill, but he seems to always place this stuff somewhere such that it's at either a crest or something. So that way you end up with the same thing, but then as an Ehler structure, but the opening's kind of is downhill. It seems like, but then Ehler, when he places a structure, he doesn't give consideration for north, south, east, and west. It's, his stuff is always aligned with the hill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Holzer, when he places a structure, it has to face east.
Right. Like except that Ehler doesn't build on north-facing slopes. Like, his whole north-facing slope doesn't have any structures on it. It's all on the south-facing or west-facing slopes. So he does orient that way. At least it's
really?
His own property. Yeah. You know, like, remember that walk that's, like, it's, like, all dark and shady, and then you don't really get to the structures until you pass the other side where it's warm and there's sunlight, and that's where he's built.
I'm going to say that I would I don't remember that.
Okay.
I don't remember because basically part of what I've been thinking is it's like an Ehler structure would really thrive on a north-facing slope.
Well, it's also where he's at. He doesn't, when on his north-facing slopes, he doesn't get sun there for like 5 months a year. Like, it's really cold. So it might be that in another climate further south, he would go ahead and do on north, but at his own property, he hasn't built on that north-facing slope, I guess. He's building on the top right now, right? But it's not.
Right.
But it's still just not on that. No, that there's just that area where sun does not shine for months.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. that's a good point. I think building anything. I mean, I wouldn't want to build a structure to live in on a north facing slope, just because it's like now your zone one garden is going to be in the shade a lot of the year, and you're working with particularly cold soils. That would be less than optimal. I would want something that gets a lot more sun and would warm the soils.
Great.
So, but that would be my primary reason for that. On the other hand, for animal shelters, especially if you're going to be rotating, doing a paddock shift system, you're going to end up with some north-facing slope stuff.
Sure,
and
yeah.
Holzer's, and then, of course, the animal shelter stuff, according to Holzer, is it always must face east to get the morning sun. And so then, you know, I mean, that can be a little bit of a challenge sometimes. How are you going to, you know, build it here and there and whatever? And so, I don't know. But the key is that the water that lands, I mean, with Ehler's structure, the important part is that when the water lands on the roof, it naturally, it has a path, whatever path it takes will never find an artificial edge.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the primary design of Ehler's roofs. And then he's got all these variations that you were talking about so that you can get sun coming from all four directions and meet that criteria, which I think is it takes some thought to get that worked out.
Right.
Holzer's stuff is far simpler. Holzer's not worried about getting sun from four angles, and he's not going to put any glass into his structures at all.
Yeah.
Although – not in the book, but Holzer did tell the story. He, I think it was in Spain, like deserts of Spain, where he built one of these shelters for animals, and then he came back like 3 months later to see how things were going, and people had moved the animals out, and they had moved in, like they'd.
Right.
They moved in to make it their house.
Yeah.
You know, and so Holzer kicked him out. No, this is for the animals. But these people were like, this is so much cooler. So nice. So they moved in. It's like I just think that's powerfully indicative of how well it works.
And then east facing doorways is kind of a common thing. I mean, you don't really see them, gosh, as far north and cold as he is, but so I've, you know, this is not from my experience, but from looking at permaculture differences between like the climatic profiles as a module we teach in permaculture, is that east facing huts, especially in the tropics, houses will just like, again, like let in that morning sun, and then you get light when it's not the heat of the day. Whereas if you had it faced south or west, it's like the shelter is not going to be a very comfortable, cool shelter once it starts to get hot.
Right, right. So I know some people will put most of their glass to the north with the idea that they get lots and lots of light, but then they don't get all of this direct light that you know, can be,
For like artists or something.
Yeah, for a certain kind of look inside of the house. So I've seen that. I've seen those designs, and I've seen a lot of those houses just driving around where they'll have tons of glass to the north. and very little glass to the other three directions.
Right. I like it to the south, for sure.
Right. I mean, we've been thoroughly trained in, like, get all that passive solar you can get.
Yeah.
You know. So, and make sure to put the right kind of roof over your southern window, so that way, you know, you're not getting tons of light in the summer. Tons of solar gain in the mm-hmm. summer, anyway.
Too much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's like... All right, so here's... Here's the first little bit that I've marked off. So earth shelters as pigsties. First of all, a 2 to 3 meter wide and 1 to 2 meter deep ditch is dug at the foot of a slope. Okay, so this is their quickie little, this is his quickie little shelter for pigs that we were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The location must, of course, be selected so that the ditch remains dry.
Mm-hmm.
Next, tree trunks are laid over the ditch to form a roof. The roof should be gently sloped so that any water will drain straight off it. To insulate the roof, sheeting or bitumen shingles are placed on top of it, and the whole thing is covered with a little soil or brushwood. So this is that quickie pig shelter that, I mean, I don't know, if you had a track hoe, you could probably dig the little ditch in like all of 2 minutes. And then you just got to throw some logish, branchish stuff over the top of it to kind of make a quickie roof, and boom, baby, you're done. So, and then the rest of this stuff, so it goes into roundwood shelters and earth cellars. Build most roundwood shelters larger, and I make them accessible to vehicles. This is so I can keep other livestock like cattle or horses in them with no difficulty. I can also use these buildings as storage rooms with only minor alterations. Later on, he mentioned something about how the idea is that he wants it to be big enough so that if cattle are in there and they poop a lot in there, because pigs won't poop in their shelter, but cattle will.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he can, like, you know, go in with the tractor, dig all the poop out, and then, you know, it's ready to go.
So
as opposed to,
yes.
Go ahead.
Well, how far do the pigs take it? I mean, do they, you know, like, do they get up in the middle of the night and go outside? I mean, you've been around pigs more, so you know, like, how, like, they just, you know, are they like us in that way, or do they kind of get lazy, you know, or how old are they before they get really potty trained? Like, what are the specifics when pigs will start doing that?
Well, okay, let me start off with this. Okay, let's suppose that I put you into a room that is 4 feet by 3 feet.
Right, I couldn't get out. Right, right. So
and
that's
you
different.
Can't get out.
Yeah. But no,
and
but
now
like,
you've been in there for 2 weeks.
Right.
But I keep putting food in there for you.
Right.
What's it like? Where are you
right.
sleeping? Are you?
I understand. But
okay.
Like, but like, you know how?
Now I give you the great outdoors. What do you do? So now we know what you do.
Right.
And actually, pigs are very, very similar, mm-hmm. and they're very clean when you give them the opportunity to be clean.
Mm-hmm.
And so all I can tell you is that when I set up shelters for pigs, I put a floor in them to help keep them off of the ground so that they can stay warm. And I'll put in a bunch of straw into the shelter. And I have no memory of ever pulling pig poop out or pulling out any of the straw and having it have pee on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when the piglets are brand spanking new, there might be a little bit, but that's
yeah.
about it.
Right. But it's not very nice. Yeah.
But yeah, they take it far away, and a lot of times they'll find a spot, and that's where they'll put most of it. But sometimes they're out walking around, and they'll crap while walking around, you know, outside. you know, but it's like, but definitely not in their shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So pigs are quite clean, quite tidy by nature.
Yeah.
But yeah, cattle, goats, horses, they're in their shelter. It's like goats. I think goats are barely even aware that they're even pooping at all. It's like they just, these pellets just fall out of them wherever they go, and they have really very little idea. Or either that, or the expression on their face is apathy. It's like, who cares? You know? So basically you end up having, and this is why I really, really like portable shelters, and which I realize is different than what we're reading about right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's advantages to both sides. With a portable shelter, you put, you know, goats or cattle or whatever in your portable shelter, and then you just drag it to the new spot. And yeah, when it's pouring rain, all the animals go into the shelter and hang out and poop and poop and poop. And at night they poop and just as something to do in the middle of the day, they hang out there and poop. And so basically what I do is whenever I'm placing the shelter, I'm like, okay, what's the crappiest piece of land right now? And that's where I'm going to park the shelter, because that's going to have a lot of poop, and that's going to be the spot, the lush spot next summer. Because of all the fertilizer and organic matter and whatnot. But yeah, if you're going to have a fixed shelter, then yeah, you've just gotten married to cleaning out that shelter, cleaning the poop out of there. In which case, Sepp Holter's saying, make it big enough that you can get a tractor in there to kind of, you know, dig that out.
Mm-hmm.
Make the job a little easier on yourself.
Yeah.
Although every time I think of that, I think of like how he sets up all of his shelters of that size so that they have the option of being dual purpose. So he puts in the stuff to make it so that it can be a root cellar, which makes it so that there's a pipe going underground from in front of the structure, underground and then up into the back of the structure, another pipe going out of the roof of the structure. So that way there can be some air circulation. And then whenever I think of like, okay, now we're going to, you know, go in there with a tractor and dig the poop out, and, you know, I'm thinking, be careful you don't break that piece of pipe that's back in the back mm-hmm. wall there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, the next section, the next little piece I've marked up. The shelter is designed so that it is closed on three sides and that the entrance faces east. This way the shelter faces the rising sun, and the first rays of sunlight will wake the animals. If it is too hot for the animals at midday during the summer, they are sheltered from the sun inside and have a pleasant, cool living temperature. Wow, what the hell did I mark out here? I made notes. I don't know what the hell I think I was marking off. When choosing timber, you should make sure that the dimensions are large enough, because the thicker the logs, the longer they will last. The type of wood also plays a large role in this. Larch and robinia last the longest. The quality of the timber, in other words, factors such as how knotty it is or whether it is infested with bark beetles is, however, of minor importance. This allows you to make good use of low quality and therefore low priced timber. Okay, so man, we got a couple more parts. I mean, I do think that this is a really good section. I'm kind of curious about, I mean, one of the primary things to think about when putting wood into soil, I think a little bit about like how do you keep the wood from rotting at the soil level? I think that's the primary spot. Because like when we talk about the failure, like when these things start to decompose, I imagine that the spot where it fails first is at the soil level.
Sure. I think, Mike, does he burn the wood first?
Yeah, well, that's what he currently does. He does some of that charring. And so basically he'll make a great big fire and spread the coals out, and then he'll like roll the logs like hot dogs across this across the coals.
Uh huh. Yeah.
And then yeah, it'll char the lower end, and then where the soil meets the wood will be a charred spot. And it's like, it's kind of funny, the stuff that's underground tends to be okay longer, last longer, and the stuff above ground lasts longer. It's right at that soil level where you get this mixture of soil microbes and lots of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, when you get a cow that comes along and pees near there, then you add a little bit of moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've got a root cellar thing going on and the air is just moist, now you've got, right there at the soil level, you've got like this humid air plus the soil microbes and the wood. And so the wood just gets, you know, eaten up right there. So I've had some ideas. Well, another thing that Mike has done in the past, and I think he's still doing it, and it's something that I've read from some people saying that they hate it, and then some people say that it works out great, and so there's like a lot of controversy over it, is that he'll take five of those big black garbage bags and wrap them around the base of the pole before putting it into the ground. So then every time you see a post in the ground, there's like this 2 inches of black plastic sticking up, and usually he's got some duct tape around it, right, or something like that. Well, and then as you add in more stuff, then you kind of end up not seeing that.
Yeah. I mean, that could work. I mean, that's how Mike Gaylor's creations is just like hippies in the woods building structures. So, hey, you know, why not? I mean, especially the heavy-duty contractor garbage bags. Pretty cheap, yeah. I mean, compared to compared to buying a pond liner or something, yeah. But
so my concern with that system, so I would not do that. I'd have other ways of trying to mitigate this issue. But my concern with that system would be that if there is, like, let's suppose that a cow backs up and pees right on the wall.
Right. Then it's going to stay in that freaking garbage bag. A little, you know, if a little bit can get in, is that what you're getting at?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Or if there's ever any kind of moisture running down the log in any way, it will build up at the bottom of that bag. And so then the bottom of the post is sitting in soup, which, of course, is really going to help with any kind of rot.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think that the thing to do is that instead of that is to not have the bag. I think charring is a good thing. So that way you have char right at that level, which, you know, this just popped into my head. Consider for a moment how that charring, that charcoal-like substance, that which is not that far off from biochar,
mm-hmm.
how that makes the wood last much longer because it tends to make your microbes sad. I mean, that's really what the mission is there. Your microbes are kind of like, ew. And so they're going to, like, not mess with it.
But it's interesting because biochar is like all of these little holes for all these critters to hang out. So I'm trying to reconcile in my brain the differences between the two. I mean, biochar obviously lasts a long time in the soil. You see where I'm getting at, where I'm confused?
I do. Here's what it is. I just flicked a match, and now I'm watching the fire burn. Go for it. Mm-hmm. Now you just do. This is what, because what you're saying is the stuff that just ran through my head. Like, because basically my experience with biochar is like I've been to a lot of places where they've used it, and then they've got this area has the biochar and this area doesn't, and I'm looking at them, and it's kind of like I don't see any difference.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're like, but biochar is so awesome. And it's like, and everything I've read is like, you know, yes, you can get biochar to do amazing things in tropical regions. And in theory, you know, it should be able to still do amazing things in colder regions. But I haven't seen it. I haven't heard of, like, big reports or seen good pictures of it. But I do think that, you know, there are downsides, though, too. And there's, like, we have a video up on Permies that somebody made. I didn't make the video, but somebody made. And it's, like, basically, you know, there are upsides and downsides in temperate regions. And it's kind of like, overall, the video was saying overall, not worth it.
I mean, what's the downside? I mean, we've probably seen the same demonstration areas where it's like, well, yeah, you know, it's plants.
I visited the places that I've been to where biochar was not working. I said, oh, I so need to make a video of that. And they said, I can't let you make a video because I don't want the biochar people to hate me. You know, and it's kind of like, so I ended up not making a video.
But I mean,
totally understand that.
I mean, do plants grow less? Like, how would it be destructive or harmful for the ecosystem?
Okay, well, I mean, which is exactly what we're talking about now. If you char that post before putting it in, it'll double the lifespan of it.
Right.
Right?
Yeah. Well,
why is that? Why does it double the lifespan of it?
Well, it breaks down slower. I mean, which the biochar advocates would say as well. But you know what I'm thinking of is how
that's a good point.
how Ben Law uses biochar on his paths in his garden. It's like he doesn't want plants to be growing on the path, but then he's still getting all of these little apartment buildings for microbes to hang out and into his soil eventually. So that, I mean, that seems like a good system because you're using the best of both worlds. That it won't, that plants maybe won't grow right into it, but also that you're creating little homes for lots of critters later.
Well, so you made a very good point there, and it's just that it lasts longer. Which biochar, I mean, that's the reason why they use it down in the tropical regions, is they can't get other organic matter to stick around in the soil, the decaying matter. So
Right.
then you use biochar, which will last a very long time.
Right. And create little homes for organisms,
And basically, my thinking is that having a little bit, you know, is indeed a good thing, mostly because it's good to have, like, but I wouldn't do it universally all over everything. I would rather do it, like, you know, in spots, like, therefore creating edge. I would have some edges have some biocharishness, and a lot of it is out of, you know, I'm going to call it ignorance on my own part. To say, like, I'm not sure what biochar does or doesn't do, but I imagine it adds something. I do know that there are instances, like, I remember when I was a kid, we'd go looking for morel mushrooms, and it's like the place to find them is where there was a fire 2 or 3 years ago. And, of course, there's char there. And it's like, who knows what the magic mystery is there, but there's something there that's not in other places that somehow has worked out to be good. And so I'm going to call it ignorance on my part and then say, you know, but okay, so biochar, yes, there's parking spaces for all kinds of organisms as well as nutrients. You know, it's like cation exchange capacity, basically. You know, same thing as you can get with clay in your soil. But I just kind of feel like, you know, you're going to create pollution when you do this process. I mean, I have yet to see a biochar process that doesn't put – well, actually, no, I take that back, because when we do the TLUD stuff, that doesn't seem to have any pollution. But it does – you know, it is, of course, putting some carbon into the atmosphere. But, you know, as long as you're doing it, you're kind of getting some cooking out of it along the way. So, all right.
Right. And, again, I like Ben Law's system because it's like he's using the – I mean, he's using fires for different reasons, and then biochar is a product of it, and then he's using it in the pathways where it's like it's also creating this mulch area and this warmer microclimate just to get more sun and more heat in these forest gardens that are like in glades in the forest somewhere, and then it's working its way into the soil where it's doing that benefit too. So it just, that seems like a really well thought out system to me.
See, I would think that if you put it in your pathways, then you end up getting all that black stuff all over your shoes, and then you better not be wearing your shoes in the house. you're gonna be tracking that black stuff everywhere. That's anyway. All right, so we may have wandered off the topic a little bit, but all right, you can get your posts to last longer by charring them first. I think that a thing to do, something that I've put a little bit of thought into anyway, is that I kind of wonder about what if you were to take you have a hole, and then you're going to put the post into the hole, and then there's like a couple of inches of gap around the post where you're going to fill it in and you're going to pack it in order to get your post to stay. And I kind of think, what if you took like a cup of borax and mixed it up with the stuff that you're going to put back into the hole?
Or just gravel.
Well, it's usually like more like a sand. It's whatever soil you happen to have.
Right. I know, but maybe
it's not really soil. It's subsoil. It's you know, so it's not topsoil. You definitely want something subsoil-ish. But you're gonna pack it tight. The key is that the borax is going to be very antifungal, anti-bug. Lots of things that cause rot, and so therefore, and then the thing is, I would not want to do this anywhere where that spot spot is going to encounter a lot of moisture. Like if it was a post, if it's a fence post outside, this is a bad idea. But if it's a post that's inside of a structure that's never going to get rained on, I think this is an awesome idea. And I think that you're going to virtually eliminate rot at the soil level. And I've never heard of it being tried, but this is an idea. Yeah, that's all.
Got it.
There, I've expressed my idea.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about borax. I said yes.
Well, it is toxic, but it's extremely low toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, you know, around the house, if you've got mold around the house, nothing's better than borax. If there's anything better than borax, I'd like to hear what's better than borax. Because the great thing is like, if you're in a bathroom, say, and there was, like, mold on the ceiling, then you not only using a borax solution, not only does that, like, clean it right off, but if you, as you're cleaning it, if you leave a residue of borax behind, then nobody touches that. So they don't get any of the low toxicity. I mean, it's such a low toxicity that environmentalists advocate it.
Yeah.
So, but I just want to emphasize it still is toxic. It's just very low toxicity. So, but on the other hand, it's like you leave that residue behind, and the mold does not come back. And so now you've done long-term mold cleaning. I mean, I've been to places where they clean the mold off of the ceiling in their bathroom every 2 weeks because it just keeps coming back. And they use bleach. And bleach does not leave any residue. And I, you know what? I've not used bleach for anything for like 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think bleach is just horrible, nasty stuff. And I wouldn't use it for anything. But then mold is effectively a fungus, and so it's kind of like, well, if it works this well on mold and preventing mold and eliminating mold, it's like why not put it into this mix? Why not do what I just suggested? I think that would work really well. The only thing is that if it's outside, like if you did a fence post this way, it would prevent the rot of the fence post for a while, but eventually rain is going to wash all that borax out and into the groundwater, and I don't want it in the groundwater. But then if it's a post that's inside of a building, then it's kind of like you're not going to get any rain there. Granted, cows might pee on it, but they're not going to pee on it so much that any of the pee or the borax is ever going to hit the groundwater.
Yeah. Should we move to the next section?
Okay, the next part I've marked off is, it is possible to build a roundwood shelter of this kind with a width of 3 meters. Oh, did I already read this part? With a width of 3 meters, a length of 6 meters, and a height of 2 meters with an excavator and one additional person within a day. Oh, I haven't read this part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes this one of the fastest and cheapest methods of building an insulated shelter or earth cellar. The cost of renting the excavator comes to around 400 to 500 euros a day in Austria, around 10 work hours. If you allow for the cost of the sheeting, nails, and your own labor, the total will be between 700 and 800 euros, if you have the timber already. The lifespan of a building like this, of course, varies depending on the type of wood used and the dimensions. If you use larch or robinia wood with a diameter of 30 to 40 centimeters, it will last for around 30 years. For a building constructed in a single day, that is a remarkably long time.
Yeah.
I do think that this is, like, you know, rather brilliant. The only downside being is I don't like having fixed shelters, but it's like in this case the upsides vastly outweigh the downsides. Everything I've done to date for animal shelters has been portable shelters because I like to drag them around. But man, the points that he's making here are powerfully compelling. A shelter of this kind is very well suited to cattle because of its height. As cattle are not as clean as pigs, the shelter must be easily accessible. I have solved this problem by building it 3 meters high so I can easily muck it out with a tractor. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Yeah. And then I think he talks about how he does have the animals change shelters as they change paddocks too. At least I wrote that in the margin.
Right.
Yeah, as the animals change paddocks regularly, some of the shelters can be used in storage rooms. So we talked about that before, but that kind
right.
of gives a clue into the, maybe it's like he's got the wagon wheel thing going on with a few different paddocks out of that one shelter, and then it's like everybody out, move to another one where there's going to be the same things going on.
Does he say somewhere that he's doing the wagon wheel thing?
No.
I didn't read that. Okay, all right. Now I'm looking at all the pictures in the latter chapters to try and see if I see something that looks wagon wheel-esque.
Maybe he's changing them for each one, and that would also actually, you could minimize fencing that way just because they would be based in a different house. They would be hitting different crops, but yeah, I wonder how that works because that's a, that's less paddocks that you'd get out of the system if you weren't doing some kind of wagon wheel gated thing out of the shelter.
Yeah, I kind of think that I advocate against the wagon wheel.
Hmm.
Because I just think you get too many parasites and whatnot building up.
Oh, in the main shelter.
In that shelter.
Yeah.
And I don't.
Again,
I don't.
You
I don't
need a
like
lot of land to do it differently.
A lot of people have a
portable shelter. Yeah.
A lot of people don't even have a wagon wheel. They just have like a chicken coop and run, right?
Right.
And then
totally.
And then it's like, I just kind of think, man, that is like a disease pit. That chicken coop there. That's like a disease incubator. And then of course, you know, when you get far, far away from the chicken coop, you might still have a little bit of grass growing or something. But right next to the chicken coop, it's just all dust, it's all dirt. And it just kind of seems like that's not good habitat for a chicken. It's just that land, the land near the chicken coop is utterly destroyed year-round. And it's overly fertile. And it's waste. It's a waste of fertility. You know, all that chicken poop all piling up inside the coop, and then you got to go in there and clean it, and you got to, yeah, so I don't know, I can go on and on about that, but I think you get the idea.
Yeah, I've heard it before.
Yeah. But have I said it in a podcast?
I don't know, some of the stuff I just confuse with, like, hanging out with you in person is kind of funny, because it's like, yeah, you said that on a podcast, even if I haven't heard it from you in person. It's like, that's another one of your rants, I've heard that, that's fine.
Well, yeah, and maybe by making these podcasts, I can be less ranty in person.
Right, you could talk less. I don't know. I don't know if that would actually
happen. Oh, don't push your luck. I'll just talk about stupid things now.
So, what's the next section that you're, let's see.
Use as a storage room.
Yeah.
To insulate the building for storage through winter, I block the entrance with straw. The insulation, coupled with the temperature of the soil, will stop the building from freezing in even the harshest of winters. If I only need the building for storage, it's easy to build a door and create an easily accessible storage room. In addition to balancing out the temperature, the high levels of humidity are an important advantage of these storage rooms. These days, many houses have cellars with heating systems built into them. Concrete floors also replaced the compacted earth floors in cellars a long time ago. However, this is disastrous for storing fruit and vegetables. The heating means that the humidity is usually so low that apples put into storage wither and wrinkle in the shortest amount of time. However, the high humidity, around 80 to 90% in earth cellars, and their fairly steady temperature between 8 and 10 degrees Celsius is ideal for storing the majority of crops.
Yeah. And he talks about, as far as you're talking about winter cold, he says earlier in this section that it's down to negative 25 Celsius in his region, which is, that sounds cold. Sounds really cold.
Right. Well, and 25 below Celsius ends up being the point at about the same for negative 25 Fahrenheit.
Ooh.
That's where the two actually meet.
Cold, cold, cold. Yeah.
Yeah. So damn cold. And you know, it's like it gets the temperatures, the low temperatures for Sepp's place is about the same as the Missoula area.
Hmm.
So, in fact, we had a winter not long ago in Missoula where we didn't even get below zero Fahrenheit.
Wow.
Usually we get
Fahrenheit. Okay.
Fahrenheit.
Okay.
So Fahrenheit.
Got it.
So we had one winter where we didn't get below zero. Usually we get to like, you know, 5 below, 8 below, something like that. But once every 10 years or so, it'll be 20 below.
Oof.
Yeah. So, and once in a really, really, really long time, it'll get to 30 below. And my impression is that it's very much the same at Sepp's place. We're like, in fact, Missoula's not too far off for being at the same latitude.
Hmm.
And Missoula's a little lower altitude.
Right. Interesting. So, I mean, that could be like the equivalent in a lot of ways, especially if you go up in the hills so that you have a bit more altitude. Because Missoula's in the valley, you know, just go up, if you have a property up in the hills. I don't know how Catarina's is.
All right. So the last section is on stone cellars,
yeah.
And I didn't mark anything to read from that.
Okay.
I'm looking at the pictures though.
Mm-hmm.
And the one picture where it's like got a stone roof like thing, it's like wow. Wow, that's gotta be a lot of work. And I'm kind of thinking like maybe it's one of those things where they built a form and then they just put lots of rocks and cement there. And in a dome shape, you know, the arc, the power of the arc.
Well, right, because he has stone. I mean, his pictures look like stone, but then his drawing looks. Wait, where did that?
Like picture? Cement.
Yeah. Maybe he just did that to simplify the picture, but or he's just,
right.
He is using cement. I don't know that one below with those kegs, the beer kegs or something. That looks like just stone stacked though.
The ceiling looks like it has cement in it or something.
Yeah, that's crazy. That would be crazy dry stacked.
But, you know, and in fact, that would probably be a fun thing to see at the Bullock Brothers because one of the Bullock Brothers is like a stone guy, right? He's like stone is his medium for all the stuff he does.
Yep, yeah.
So that would be to see a dry stack arc of any kind, let alone a ceiling, would be amazing. And so you can kind of see there's a bowl shape to the ceiling in the picture for the stone one. It's just, I don't know. I'm always stunned and amazed to see that kind of work. That's a thing of beauty. Although, I don't know, curious about it. I'm just really curious. How do they do it? I imagine that with forms. I imagine they didn't just like start going out there and stacking it. I imagine there were forms, but I don't know. All right, Kelda.
I think
we're good. We can move on. All right.
Chapter two.
Want to do the sign up?
Chapter. But what are we going to do next? What is that? Just to give people a glimpse.
It says fruit trees.
Chapter three, fruit trees is next, everyone. Oof.
Wow, a whole chapter on fruit trees. Oh, so hopefully we're going to go into his pruning and non-pruning stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, there's stuff in here about grafting. So he is going to, there's a ton of stuff about grafting. Gobs.
Yeah.
Sowing a fruit forest. I wonder if that's going to be seed-based. All right. Then it goes into cultivating mushrooms. Apparently, he made his living for a long time being a mushroom guy. Oh, look at that. Distributing spores. I'm sorry. I'm cruising through looking at all the pictures.
We opened up the Pandora's box. All right.
Yeah. All right. We should stop. I'm going to stop looking at it.
Okay.
Take the book down. Do the sign-off.
Okay. If you like this sort of thing, try keeping Paul and Kelda on topic, and we'll be talking about shelters and homesteading and permaculture all the time. Come out to permies.com. I forgot that part. Jeez.
We're going to have to get you to practice more.
Okay.